Good evening, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com.
Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW.
For other promotional offers, please visit TheOrganicView.com's website.
In this special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will be discussing the current events and news about neonicotinoids. Some of the topics for tonight's show will include an update on neonicotinoids in Australia and Canada, key highlights from the recent USDA listener session on pollinator strategy, and also a very interesting attack on Harvard's Dr. Alex Liu. And we also have some other topics that we hope to include, but 30 minutes, we try to do our best. In any event, I'd like to first welcome to the show my special guest co-host, Tom Theobald. Good evening, Tom, and thank you for joining me again.
Good evening, June, from Colorado. We're coming out of the deep freeze, and we're looking forward to some 60-degree days.
Well, as Thanksgiving approaches, so does winter, and I wish I could say the same thing for the East Coast, but in any event, it'll be an interesting winter as things develop. Now, the first topic I'd like to talk about are the updates with Australia and also with Canada. So, Tom, could you just share with the listeners some of the correspondence that you've been receiving about neonicotinoids in Australia?
One of the issues within the past week or 10 days has been the question of Australia. The corporate interests would like everybody to believe that Australia is free of any problems and they don't have the varroa mite, which is intended to support their contention that the neonicotinoids are safe and that it's primarily the varroa that's the problem. Has little or nothing to do with the pesticides. But you have to look a little closer and read between the lines. This is the corporate view, but if you talk to the commercial beekeepers in Australia, you'll get quite a different picture. And I received an email just within the last 3 days from a commercial beekeeper with 39 years of experience and several thousand colonies, and he outlined the same sorts of problems that they're having from the neonicotinoids that we're seeing in the United States and everywhere else in the world where they're used. But the corporate interests are doing their best to perpetuate this, what basically is a lie. There's no other way to describe it. They're just lying through their teeth. The conditions are not good in Australia. From Canada, I just learned just recently that Quebec has chosen to join the Ontario beekeepers in the class action suit. I haven't seen an article. I don't know the details, but that's the gist of it.
There is some information, but unfortunately it's in French. Hopefully we'll be able to share with our listeners a direct link that gives more information about that decision. I think it's great that the Canadians are really working together to do something to fight against the use of neonicotinoids. So that's
another interesting thing that's come out of Canada is the medical community is speaking out and calling for the elimination of the neonicotinoids because of their concerns over its effect on human health. We were assured, of course, in the beginning that there would be no such problems.
Well, if you look at all of the research that's been published, how these chemicals impact so many different species, it's it's no surprise that inevitably the impact on human health will, you know, be obvious. But unfortunately, there really isn't anything out there that substantiates that. But if you look at so many species that are being that have been impacted, it just makes sense.
Yes.
Now, the next subject that I'd like to move on to, which is kind of a lengthy one, is in regards to the recent USDA listening session on pollinator strategy, which took place on November 17th. It was really, really quite a diverse number of speakers from, you know, all different areas, beekeepers to industry leaders, so on and so forth. Just to give our listeners a little bit of history, back in June, President Obama announced the formation of a task force to promote the health of honeybees and other pollinators. The Pollinator Health Task Force, which was co-chaired by USDA and EPA, has been tasked with addressing the challenges contributing to declining pollinator populations. In particular, it calls on EPA to assess the impacts of bee-harming neonicotinoid pesticides within 180 days. At the end of October, the task force announced that it would miss its self-imposed deadline of December 20th to release its action plan for ensuring pollinator health. At the same time, USDA and EPA announced two upcoming listening sessions to hear feedback that will inform its pollinator health strategy. So this was actually made available by one of the listeners, so thank you, you know who you are. And for those of you that would like to listen to the entire 2 hours, it is available on our YouTube channel and also will be available in the post-show article. But I would just like to take a moment to share with you all some of the comments that were made. So we're going to begin with Ray McAllister from CropLife.
My name is Ray McAllister. I'm the Senior Director of Regulatory Policy for CropLife America, which is the National Trade Association for the Crop Protection Industry. Our member companies develop, manufacture, and market virtually all of the crop protection products used in American agriculture. I'm very proud of the work and the products and the stewardship of our organization and its members. In the public's eye, pollinator health has been strongly linked with seed treatment. The treatment of seeds and crop protection chemicals is the safest and most efficient way of addressing host pest and disease problems. Protection is achieved by precise placement of the minimum amount of product to do the job with minimum exposure to non-target organisms and to the farmers. The alternatives to seed treatment typically involve multiple soil and foliar applications of a larger quantity of the product to much larger areas. These compounds may be more toxic, and they may need to be applied at times when exposure to pollinators and other non-target organisms is more likely. Much is made of systemic insecticide treatments and the potential for pollinator exposure through pollen and nectar. But the small amount of product needed to provide pest protection to the seed and the very early season application assure that exposure to pollinators is reduced well below levels of concern by the time bees are foraging for pollen and nectar. Our CropLife Foundation has prepared an extensive report on the benefits of seed treatment, including how they reduce risks, which we will submit to the docket for these listening sessions. The CropLife America and the American Seed Trade Association have developed a comprehensive seed treatment stewardship program for both the facilities that treat the seeds and the farmers who plant them. This stewardship effort is supported also by the National Corn Growers Association, the American Soybean Association, and the American Farm Bureau. The seed must be treated with a combination of products and polymers that will ensure that the products are available when needed during the germination process without impeding germination or the early growth of the crop. This stewardship program emphasizes the quality of the seed treatment process to make certain that the treatment adheres to the seed until that seed is planted. It also emphasizes proper operation of planting equipment and the use of seed lubricants in the planters to minimize dust off from seed in the field. As rapidly as practically possible, innovations and improvements in planter design and the lubricant technology are incorporated into the stewardship process. We will be sharing details of the efforts to date and the plans for the future with the docket for these listening sessions. And Jane DeMarchi from the ASTA is here with some additional information. The CLA member companies have a strong concentration of entomology expertise needed to understand the health of pollinators, to evaluate the hazards from all sources, and to explore, develop, and implement solutions. Several CLA members are investing substantial resources directly in pollinator health, improvements in nutrition, protection against diseases, virus, pests, and parasites. These companies are partnering with government regulatory agencies, public and private research efforts, and beekeepers to develop and bring to market innovative products and strategies. Among the more exciting concepts are RNAi technology, precision application of mite control products to the individual bees, and new chemistry. From across the spectrum of organizations, interests, and individuals who feel passionately about the welfare of pollinators, it's easy to find much to disagree on. Honey, honeybees, pollinators, and pollination are vital elements of the larger agricultural picture. So likewise is crop protection. We can accomplish far more via a civil dialogue to find out where we can agree and how we can resolve the differences and problems than with shrill arguments and accusations. If any of you have additional constructive suggestions how the crop protection industry can help and improve, let's talk. Thank you.
Well, Tom, do you have any additional comments?
Well, I think the short answer to that question is blah, 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 blah. All the right words, very little substance. You have to wonder, and I'm sure this man's intentions are good, but he's completely out of touch with reality, and in many instances, he's just flat out lying. I don't know how to address that. And what I would suggest to the listeners is they listen to some of the further testimony. Hopefully go back and listen to the whole thing and put it in context, and you can see where the truth most likely lies in these arguments. So
thank you, Tom.
Let's hear some more.
Well, I would personally like to invite Mr. McAllister from CropLife to be a guest on the show and also have a discussion perhaps with, for example, Dr. Henk Tennekes, who is a Dutch toxicologist who actually blew the whistle about the impact of neonicotinoids, or perhaps have a discussion with Dr. Dave Goulson, or you know, any one of the scientists that have come on the show to talk about their research. It would be quite interesting. And as he said, he's open to suggestions, and that would be great if he does decide to take me up on that offer. The next clip is of Julie Shapiro. She's a senior associate at the Keystone Center. So here we go.
Okay, thanks. Again, my name is Julie Shapiro. I'm a senior associate at the Keystone Center, and I'm the facilitator of the Honeybee Health Coalition. On behalf of the coalition, I want to thank the president for his vision and the task force for its work and for the chance to provide input, especially around public-private partnerships. The coalition is one of the largest and most diverse public-private partnerships already working to address honeybee health, and we welcome the opportunity to work with the task force going forward. The coalition brings together more than 30 organizations in the United States and Canada, including beekeepers, crop producers, agribusinesses, environmentalists, researchers, state and federal agencies, and more. We see honeybee health as a multi-factor problem with no single silver bullet solution. The coalition would like to emphasize the importance of collaboration across diverse stakeholders to address all of the major factors influencing pollinator health. Last month, the coalition released its Bee Healthy Roadmap, identifying four top priorities: hive management, including varroa mite control, forage and nutrition, crop pest control, and stakeholder communication and collaboration. We offer the roadmap as a template that others can build upon with the coalition or on their own, and it is this collaboratively identified science-based roadmap that forms the basis of the coalition's recommendations for the National Pollinator Health Strategy. So the recommendations for the task force and for the strategy include: number one, hive management and varroa control. Support efforts of technology transfer teams and other state and federal extension programs for beekeepers, and accelerate identification and registration of tools and products to effectively control varroa destructor mites. Number two, forage and nutrition. The coalition would like to see an increase in the acreage and nutritional value of forage plantings in the USDA's conservation programs that are specific to honeybees, including the CRP program. And they'd like to see that adopt stakeholder-informed seed specifications and technical guidelines that encourage planting more affordable, varied forage for honeybees. The coalition would also like to see support for public-private demonstration projects that show and quantify the agronomic, economic, and ecosystem service co-benefits of honeybee forage for a variety of stakeholders. We need to build the win-win business case for bee forage on private lands. The coalition would also like to see increases in forage opportunities and nutritional value of forage for honeybees on other private and public lands, and support for research and development for nutritional supplements to support commercial honeybees when forage is lacking. Within crop pest control, the coalition would like to see support for state-based and other programs for bringing together beekeepers, crop producers, and other stakeholders in the discussion and implementation of best management practices. As well as encouragement for state and other programs for pesticide applicators and other stakeholders to provide continuing education credits for training. We'd also like to see work through the appropriate agencies and stakeholders to improve incident reporting mechanism and incident reporting data. Finally, within collaboration and communication, the task force's public education campaign should create awareness of the multiple factors that impact honeybee health, the need to improve bee health through a diversity of approaches, the essential need for public-private collaboration, and the message that beekeepers and farmers are part of one agricultural system supporting global food security. The National Pollinator Health Strategy should promote collaborative public-private partnerships to find solutions for all stakeholders and that can achieve more than any one stakeholder can achieve on its own. Thank you again for the opportunity, and the coalition again welcomes the opportunity for future collaboration.
Okay, and that was Julie Shapiro. Next, we have Beth Conway.
Thank you to the USDA and the EPA for conducting these listening sessions. My name is Beth Conway. I am president of the Colorado State Beekeepers Association, and I am here representing both the CSBA as well as myself and my bee business. This year, honey production was dramatically diminished throughout our state. As with all things beekeeping, there are many theories on why this is, but the bottom line is that there is no honey when there is no nectar. Nectar is produced by blooming plants, and there are simply not enough of them. Bees and all other pollinating insects need clean, safe forage. First, I would like to talk about clean and safe. Clean and safe forage is defined as pesticide-free. In the case of forage, this would be free of both herbicides and insecticides. The precipitous decline of the monarch butterfly is directly related to the rampant use of broad-spectrum herbicides, in particular glyphosate. We as a society need to reduce our dependence on these products. Insecticide use, especially neonicotinoids as prophylactic seed coatings, must also be reduced or eliminated. There are several arguments that have been put forth justifying the continued registration and allowable use of these pesticides. The first is that they are necessary to ensure maximum crop production. As EPA's own recently issued report on soybean production indicates, this argument is specious. When did the idea that ensuring the health of bees and other pollinating insects become unsound agricultural practice? When did bees, essential to agriculture, become the collateral damage of it? And when did beekeepers become the enemy of the farmer? For heaven's sake, bees are agriculture, just a humming little division of it. Beekeepers are farmers. We do not have to give up crop production to have bee protection. We can have both. Second, it is argued that they are less toxic than previous generations of pesticides. While it is claimed that human health may be less impacted by these products than the ones that came before them, there is ample peer-reviewed evidence of environmental problems occurring at incredibly low concentrations within populations of aquatic insects, earthworms, bees, and other terrestrials, to name just a few. These animals comprise the base of the food pyramid. If they are unhealthy, so are the animals that eat them. As the animal at the top of the food pyramid, I am less and less confident that these pesticides are less toxic than their predecessors. Third, the argument is made if they are removed from the market, then agriculture will need to return to organophosphates and other older, more toxic to human pesticides to control crop pests. At the risk of being struck by a bolt of lightning, I say bring it on. At least when my bees are exposed to the improper application of this class of insecticides, I had a pile of dead bees that I could point to, and I knew exactly what had happened. Not only that, they were not nearly as persistent. Now I have bees that die in the spring, they die in the summer, they die in the fall, they die in the winter. I have hives with young queens that die, hive with old queens that die. I have hives in town that die, I have hives in the country that die. I have hives with lots of mites that die, I have a hives with few mites that die. And yet, nearly every one of them now is a quote-unquote mystery. There are those that will say I suffer from an ailment known as PPB, piss-poor beekeeping. I beg to differ. I am a conscientious and informed beekeeper, and my results no longer reflect my efforts. In addition, data suggests that non-managed solitary bees are experiencing these same declines, and I am not practicing my PPB on them. Next, I would like to talk about forage. Forage is bee food. Forage has been compromised in the U.S. by several practices. Overuse of herbicides around herbicide-resistant crops has turned our agricultural areas into a virtual forage desert. Edge-to-edge planting has further decreased available food sources. Noxious weed programs have compromised forage along most road systems. Large hardware stores are allowed to sell neonicotinoid-treated plants as quote-unquote bee-friendly.
Ms. Conroy?
Yes,
sorry.
Are we out of time?
Do you mind wrapping up momentarily?
I am.
Giving you an extra 2 minutes. Thank you.
Correct. Opportunities abound within the presidential memorandum for federal government agencies and programs to encourage and provide clean, safe forage, as well as to address other glaring gaps in data. Plan is comprehensive, and if properly administered in a timely fashion, will provide a positive impact on pollinator health and habitat. CSBA is ready and willing to assist in all appropriate aspects of the federal strategy implementation. Thank you.
And the last clip that I'd like to include, because we are actually running out of time, is Jim Doan, who is actually a beekeeper from New York. Here you go.
Next, we have Jim Doan, who is also participating via webinar and may need assistance from the operator to open his line. Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir, we can.
Okay. I found it interesting that in 8 years of beekeepers coming to Washington, D.C., the chemical manufacturers and their lobbyists on last Wednesday said, I only have three words to say, Varroa, Varroa, Varroa. Wow, you had a chance to offer solutions but decided to throw mud, thinking that was better. You should have come forth and said, we have more effective miticides since mites are the issue, but you didn't. The Bayer Bee Lab could have offered to send tech teams out to investigate why bees are dying, but they didn't. They could have offered to even show commercial beekeepers how to make their bees look better at their bee lab, but they didn't. So instead, I'm here today to take the high road since the gutter is full of the mud they threw last week. beekeepers must be shown a map of areas that are not highly contaminated with systemic pesticides and fungicides. Research has shown that systemics are an issue to bee health. In order to accomplish this, a nationwide soil and water testing program needs to be established so that beekeepers can make educated decisions as to where to place bees. A program similar in Florida has been done to show beekeepers where you can put bees and receive the least amount of exposure from agrochemicals. It's a good start to better bee health. A hive of bees needs clean water, pollen, and nectar. Second, a nationwide test needs to be done to determine how much of non-beekeeper ag products are in hives and how to reduce those levels to increase hive health. I heard this mentioned last Wednesday by one of the ag representatives to test honey, but it needs to be more broad spectrum. If I am containing my hives with chemicals, I want to know. This would help beekeepers on the management side to determine comb rotation. Beeswax is a sponge for everything that a hive makes contact with. This would also help beekeepers and researchers to determine what miticide to not be using to increase hive health. Third, organic miticides need to be registered like oxalic acid. I think beekeepers need more tools to combat mites, although to be honest, since I have moved from an ag area to a non-ag area, we are down to one single treatment per year of an organic product to kill mites. Beekeepers around the world use this product safely, except we're not allowed to in the United States. Fourth, the area that are going to be planted for pollinator-friendly seed should be tested to ensure that there is no systemic residues present to actually harm pollinators more than if the ground were left unplanted. We also need to get a few things straight that I think get overlooked here at meetings. A bee is not a hive, but a hive is full of bees. It is made up of different and distinct groups of bees. The hive should be thought of as a human body. If you hurt nurse bees or another group, you kill the hive over time, just as you hurt your liver. Hurting your liver kills a human over time. Just with a hive, it takes less time than a human to expire, but the result is the same, dead. It's time for chemical companies and beekeepers to try to work together, but I guess you and the chemical industry and other ag industries have decided that the roughly 800 beekeepers that control 90% of the bees, based on the estimate by Tim Flottam, that are used for pollinating all the fruit and vegetables in this country, are poor managers of their businesses. So based on the last 8 years, you will ignore my constructive ideas and do what you've been doing, which is nothing, which leads to another year of more dead hives and more meetings that lead to nothing getting better. It is said doing nothing is easier than doing the right thing. Please do the right thing. Thank you.
And folks, the next clip is going to be of Steve Ellis. For those of you that are listening live, you may not hear the entire clip, but the clip will be available as well as the rest of the tonight's show on theorganicview.com. So it'll be available in a post-show article. So next we have Steve Ellis.
Yes, my name is Steve Ellis. I'm a commercial beekeeper. I run about 2,300 hives of bees in Minnesota and California, and I've been at this for about 35 years. For the last 6 years, I've been reporting bee mortality incidents associated with corn planting in my area of the Midwest. And I've become quite familiar with what this neonicotinoid poisoning looks like in a honeybee hive. And I would just like to say that a lot of the poisoning that is occurring is being missed, even by commercial beekeepers, because some of these things that occur when a superorganism like a honeybee is poisoned are not readily noticeable. You'll have queen supersedure, you'll have a depleted population, you'll have impaired queen function, you'll have queen supersedures, you'll have a number of things that will weaken the colony down. And that's a lot of us commercial beekeepers are running into things where we're finding hives that, a lot of hives die, but a lot of hives also are compromised to the point where we have to nurse along a lot of really weak hives. And I believe this is directly related to the extreme amount of neonicotinoids being spread throughout the country with seed treatments. And there were statements made earlier that seed treatments are safe for bees because bees aren't exposed to, that the amount goes down by the time the plant flowers to a negligible amount, and our observations have not been that, and the test results have not been that. We have found amounts in the pollen and the nectar of the corn plants that and plants that have been, other plants that have been contaminated by the planting of corn, namely willows and dandelions, that have been of extreme concern. In my own case, I've lost 65% of my bees already. I join a lot of other commercial beekeepers that have had similar massive losses, and we need immediate action on this. And I call on US EPA to act immediately to withdraw the seed treatment of neonicotinoids and provide some immediate relief for a very crisis situation that's going on. Thank you.
Now, that was the last clip that we have time to play for this segment. Tom, what are some of your comments about some of the folks that just spoke?
Well, I think it's fairly clear what side I come down on. I think Steve Ellis summed it up pretty succinctly for the beekeepers and what it looks like from our perspective. The science is overwhelming in the condemnation of these chemicals, and yet all we hear are excuses and evasions from the pesticide industry, and it's because these are billion-dollar products. I would encourage people to grit their teeth and listen to this whole listening session from start to finish. There was some very good testimony made on both sides, some very revealing testimony. The odd thing to my mind, and I think I mentioned it last week, is that the USDA did not record this. There was a lot of fanfare about how they were going to listen, and you would think they would expect important testimony, and indeed there was. They must have much better memories than the rest of us, because apparently they just planned to remember everything that was said. Fortunately, you have a listener who recorded it, and it is available to the public, and I think at least some of the members of the public should take the time to listen to all of it and come to their own conclusions.
I thought Beth's testimony was really powerful.
Whose testimony?
Beth's.
Beth, yes. Yeah, Beth was right on the money. Many of these speakers were pretty clear. This remains a mystery to the chemical industry. It's not a mystery to anyone else.
No, and she's also president of, what is it, the Colorado Beekeepers Association?
Colorado State Beekeepers Association, yes.
And I really...
She's the president at the state level.
I really liked her analogy, especially about the PPB.
We also had another good testimony that we didn't run, and that was from Rella Abernathy, who's the coordinator for the integrated pest management for the city of Boulder. And the city of Boulder has taken a very progressive look at these, and we're hoping for great things from the city of Boulder.
Well,
Rella was there as well.
And as you were, well, you participated in the call, and your comments are also available on the clip. But unfortunately, we are out of time. But I want to just briefly talk about one other topic that is really, really, I'm kind of speechless. It's an article that appeared in, I think the website is science20.com. And it's written by a man who basically took a very nasty swipe at Dr. Alex Liu. And the article really, it almost seems personal. What do you think, Tom?
Well, it is personal. And this particular so-called journalist is a paid mouthpiece for the chemical industry. And has no problem misrepresenting things and telling outright lies to perpetrate the ruse that the chemical companies are trying to put over on the public.
What's interesting is in the article it says, how could a Harvard study and a sizable slice of the nation's press get this story so wrong? Well, it's interesting when you take a look at research that's been conducted by people like Dr. Hank Tenekes, especially his dose time ratio study that was just that still has not been negated. Not to mention the research by Dr. Menzel in Germany. I'm just curious, Tom, why is it that their research has not been argued?
Well, we've talked about it in the past, maybe not on these programs, but one of the things that the corporations have accomplished is they've taken over most of the major media outlets. So to a great extent, they control the media, which makes a radio show like this even more important, because we're not being paid by the corporations. You know, they're not funding us, and we have a small podium from which to speak, and hopefully we have some listeners out there who are paying attention.
Well, we
do. They
aren't
going to hear it on the nightly news.
Well, that is definitely true. Now, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the listeners actually sent in a website called propagandist.org, which basically gives a very in-depth look at the journalist who published that article about Dr. Liu. And, you know, it's just interesting when you read things and you look at what's being put out there, and then you see other publications that are putting all the facts together, and especially with the links to industry. So, you know, if it's one thing if you have something that's based upon facts, but when you have what appears to be a smear campaign, you know, it's really kind of sad when it gets to that point. I mean, there's so many...
Well, you know, June, you have to conclude that these people are being paid by the corporations, because if they aren't, they're even bigger fools than they appear to be. They obviously are in the employ of the corporations. They're corporate shills.
Well, the bottom line is that the industry is going to defend itself, and they have to. That's their job, to defend their corporations, to see their corporations thrive, because otherwise they're all going to be out of jobs. But at the end of the day, this attack was very personal and also very distasteful. There are a lot of comments all over Facebook where many of the beekeepers who have not yet made up their mind as far as how they feel about the impact of neonicotinoids, I saw a lot of comments which basically said, wow, this is a little disturbing. So, you know, I just sincerely hope that we can see better material out there in the future from some of these folks.
This has gone on for years, June, and we've mentioned a number of names over time, researchers who have come out with research results that are contrary to the interests of the chemical industry, and they've been vilified and castigated, and it's just there's a whole series of these. This is nothing new.
No, it's not, but the thing is that the listeners may not be aware of just how far some of these folks will go. And it's not something that I normally would give any attention to, but I think we're at a point where we need to start talking about these things. The attack on Dr. Liu is really disappointing. It was really just not something that you would expect to read, especially the snarky comments and whatnot. I just didn't think it was really appropriate. It's one thing.
It is disturbing, but if you look between the lines, June, it really reveals the poverty of their arguments. They have to resort to all these outrageous charges and misrepresentations and outright lies to support an unsupportable position. So if you read between the lines, these attack articles are very revealing of them, not the people that they're attacking.
And unfortunately, this particular individual is not the only one that's out there. There are many people out there that are taking that position and their defense is pretty weak, to say the least. But in any event, Tom, I just want to say thank you so much for contributing to all the work that goes into this show to bring the information out to the public, and also to thank you and all of the beekeepers out there for all the work that they do. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving here in America, and it's a very, very big holiday and a very important one. And if it weren't for our beekeepers, our commercial migratory beekeepers, many of the foods that people enjoy on Thanksgiving would not be there.
That's correct.
Tom, happy Thanksgiving.
And you too, June.
Thanks for all of your help and everything into tonight's segment.
Thanks, June.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Check out next week's show, where we will resume our regular time on Thursday evening as Tom and I continue to explore these subjects that explore the impact of neonicotinoids. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone.